You are listening to the Indie Rundown Podcast. Here are your hosts, Mike and Zach.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. It's another episode of the Indie Rundown Podcast. And yes, Zach Salazar, my co-host, still isn't here. Go ahead and continue the parade and continue the celebration because I'm not sure how long this streak will last, but we're having a good time without him. And right now we have another special guest. We have an author. We're having him on the show as an author, but you know he's of course more multi-talented than that. But we definitely want to push the two books that he has out right now, Last Light and The 51st Directive. Well, who's this author we're talking about? Well, why don't I go ahead and introduce him because he's already on the line.
Michael Agliolo.
I'll take it. You did good, Mike.
Michael, how does one become an author, really? I mean, it seems like you have a past in photography. You know, outside looking in, it looks like maybe you mastered that craft and you decide, you know what, I made this look easy. I'm going to make being an author look easy. Let me put out two books. Is it that easy or take us through that journey and take us behind the curtain as to how one becomes an author?
That's an interesting way to put things together because I think I fell into writing by accident. Let me just tell you how it started. And it's kind of as a photographer, did my thing, taught photography, commercial photographer, and then became a stock photographer. Everything was great, and I've gotten to the point where I was getting close to that's enough of that, and I was lying in bed one night, my wife and I doing that typical thing you see on movies all the time where she's on her iPad and I'm on my iPad, and I look over and I go, I'm going to write a book, and I was just kind of joking around, and she gave me that Terminator expression, do it, like Schwarzenegger would say. And so I grabbed my laptop and I just said, okay. And I literally started writing. And of course, as a photographer, I wanted to, I started a story as a photographer, which was the first book that I wrote called Last Light. You should know that the reason I kept writing after I started the first paragraph is because I got interested to find out what happens next.
Right, and that's a good sign, especially coming from the writer himself. So if that's how you're feeling, obviously the audience is going to feel the same way.
Well, hopefully. All I know is that the next morning I woke up and I said, hey, I just got to find out what happens next, and then I'll go on and do whatever I'm going to do. But that feeling never stopped. That never stopped for about 2 years. And every day I'd get up and go, I really wonder what happened next, because you should know I have no idea when I write a book how it's going to end. I don't even know sometimes the next sentence. But I found out, a little bit like photography, that when you pick up the camera and you push down the trigger, you're going to take a picture. And for me, it turned out when I have my hands on the keyboard, something's going to come out. It's almost a little bit like this interview. Here I am talking. I have no idea what I'm going to say next, but it kind of comes out. And that's literally how I wrote the first book. And then the second book, same thing. And I'm in the middle of my third one right now. And I'll be honest with you, I just figured it out how it's going to end after halfway. So I was so excited I gave my wife a high five. You know, here it is. I got it.
And how has that changed? Because I know a lot of writing, especially with the screenwriting and stuff like that, they, at least the people that, you know, we've interviewed. Of course, the beauty of this is not everyone writes the same way, not everyone acts the same way, not everyone does photography the same way. But a lot of them always stress, oh, well, you got to know how it ends first because then you're going to build to it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, a novel is different than a screenplay. But now that you know the ending of this third novel that you are currently working on, how has that changed your writing process?
It makes it so much easier. It's like going in the kitchen saying, what do you want to have for dinner, versus knowing what you want to have for dinner and you've already bought the ingredients. Now you can just get to it. So it's quicker. I wish I could say that that's the way I was going to write from here on in. And you know, Mike, you are right. Everything I've ever heard, any interview of any great writer, they know the ending. They lay out chapter by chapter. They move their notes around. They have people doing research. It sounds like the really smart way to write a book. I tried it on the second book a little bit, thinking, okay, and I got nowhere. It wasn't until I just started sitting down and I picture myself in the movie. I call it a movie because in my head it is a movie. And I just let it come out. And next thing you know is, you know, you're starting your third book.
Well, that's good. I mean, that it's funny how everyone has their own style. And I think the fact that you have your own style, obviously, it's going to lead to you having your own voice, which is going to make your story unique, which is going to separate it from the pack. Last Light, we want to give a quick little synopsis. Again, published March 30, 2017. This was, how autobiographical was this novel? How much of your life as a photographer did you bring into this novel?
And you know, for me, that first book, it's because it started, and the only thing I really know career-wise was photography. So I started the first scene from a point of view that a lot of photographers use. It's a pretty good technique because most amateurs don't do it. And that's looking straight down. Most people shoot from standing straight up, straight across. But I found if you want to make something interesting, shoot it from straight above. So that's what I started visualizing with the first book. And I saw myself, I'm a fashion photographer in some respects. So I decided to take my first image and make it a location photo shoot in the desert, right beside the pyramids. And the image came to mind, and I saw myself looking down at a fashion shoot, and it was sunset. And so I started writing from a photographer's point of view of how you deal, how the photographer is when he's with the models, what it's like when he's dealing with all the problems that you're dealing with. And so my book started with a photographer and turned into what it turned into, which is quite a bit further than a photographer. Is it okay to give a little bit of what the book, how it kind of turns in direction?
It's your book. You can do whatever you like. I'm not going to stop you.
Okay. Because the book goes really quickly into I'll call it a miracle. Something happens that I like to call it ooey ooey. That's out of the ordinary. The photographer experienced a blast of direct sunlight hits his lens, and he experiences an out-of-body experience. And what happens is the model that he was photographing at that time, the light reflected off the lens, and she experienced the exact same experience. And from that, they formed a connection. They didn't realize it at the time, but they kind of became in tune with each other, which is a nice lead-in for a love story. And I did let it go that direction to a certain degree, but then I decided that I wanted to make it an international deal. So I just let my imagination go, and I wrote it into an international crisis where they were led into that crisis and became embedded with it and had to deal with it and actually helped the outcome of it. And my characters got to travel all over the world. They're in Rome. They end up literally dealing with the Pope from all this experience that happens. And so it stayed photography. And so a lot of times I got to use photography language. I got to use a camera. I got to bring in those elements. Helped a lot because I do know what I'm talking about. I was a photographer for 30 years. So that technical information and the ability to kind of bring people into a photo shoot and having assistants and working in large crews, I thought would be interesting. That was great for that book, but you should know the second one hasn't got a single thing about photography in it. I decided on the second book, if I could jump into that for a second.
Absolutely.
I decided, if I want to be a writer, which I'll digress for a second, I've never written anything before this, maybe a 10-page college paper. I probably got a C in English, and if it wasn't for autocorrect on my computer, I'd be in deep trouble. The next book, I actually started two other books, but I couldn't figure out the endings. So I turned in my chair one day and I said, okay, I'm going to start a whole nother book and I want to write something as different from the first book as I possibly can, from a whole different idea. And so I decided, here's the punchline. In my second book, I wrote it from a 31-year-old female FBI agent that's totally hot. So I wrote it in first person from a woman's point of view. And that's about as far away from the photographer that I started off my first book. And that book flowed out of me just sort of similar. It just kept coming out and turned out to be the 51st Directive, which is not a name that I made up. The 51st Directive is a real government. I don't know what the right word is. It's not a constitutional amendment, but it's close. And I didn't know that at the time, but I discovered it in research. And so this book turns into an international crisis, too. Apparently, I like that genre, which my third book is even doing. So that's how I tied in my photography on the first one, but then totally left it alone and climbed into the world of the FBI, which I knew nothing about, but I do now.
Well, it sounds great. Yeah, because you're kind of discovering it as you go. And I like the that it's in first person, because when you're reading, it puts you, for some reason, it puts you in the story, and it makes it almost seem like, you know, sometimes perception isn't reality, especially when you're reading a book through someone's point of view, and that kind of gives you as an author a new method or a new way to kind of shift things around a little bit. It makes it more interesting. But quick synopsis of the 51st Directive, published this year, by the way, February 11, 2019. When FBI agent Erica Brewer finds a letter sent to her boss that begins with, "I am dead," end quote, and warns of a conspiracy to overtake the U.S. government from within, she suspects a hoax. 3 hours later, in the apartment building of the man who claimed to be dead is on fire. Written in first person, we witness the unfolding of a conspiracy that threatens the lives of every member of Congress and pits the armed forces of the United States against each other in a military standoff for control of the nation. This novel is available in France, Italy, and the United Kingdom, so you have no excuse if you're overseas, and it's available on Amazon, paperback, and ebook, and A-books. And I forgot to mention this, but last night, Michael's first novel, available on Amazon, both ebook and paperback, A-books, and Barnes & Noble, and it's also available in France, Spain, Japan, Italy, and United Kingdom. So what are you waiting for, ladies and gentlemen? So you mentioned all the research that you put into this novel. How much research do you put in, and who are you talking to when you're talking about researching an FBI agent, something that, you know, I sure as heck know nothing about other than what I've seen in the movies?
Hey, how do you do research on how a woman thinks? Because I wrote this one, you know, from a man's point of view, I decided to feel what's it like and explain how a woman feels, thinks, acts, especially when guys are checking her out, which is really good luck doing research for that. Right. But as far as the technical stuff was concerned, 98% of it is right online, thank goodness. You can just go online and ask anything. And then there's some more scenes that are sure fun to write, where I said that our military is in a standoff with different branch of our military. Well, I interviewed, as a teacher, I had a guy in my class that was a pilot, Navy pilot taken off on aircraft carriers. So I sat down with him and went through all the dialogue and interviewed him on what it's like to be that guy. And then I took that information, and anybody out there that happened to be in a that works in a nuclear submarine, I need to interview you. I will pay you for my next book to let me know the inside workings of a nuclear submarine. But back to the real answer is, most of it is online, Mike. It's you just type in your questions. I had to, in the first book, I needed to know about nuclear weapons. So I'm pretty sure the NSA is probably sitting out front of my house wondering what this guy that wants to know how you defuse a suitcase nuclear weapon, because I found out online and I literally had that scene happen in my first book. And all the things that you have to look up, because I had the bomb in Israel. So I'm, like I said, for a while there, I was driving around wondering if I was getting going to be followed, just because you know, you're writing things, and you know, when you're looking it up online, you know, let's be real, you're probably being, someone's checking out, there's some buzzwords that you're probably triggering, and I don't think anybody personally has got earphones on, but I'm sure that it woke up a couple people, and at the same time, what I did a few times was I wrote emails out there, and I sent them out saying, hey, I'm an author.
Right.
I'm trying to write a book.
Yeah.
If you want to be bored, go ahead and sit out in front of my house, because I'll bore you to death. But hopefully my books don't.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't think so. And we're definitely looking forward to seeing what the third book is all about. And I kind of enjoy that there's, you know, they're kind of totally different in subject matter and in just the way you're going about writing the book. I guess in a way that kind of keeps things fresh on your end as an author. How was it like to be a professional photographer, not only just being but for 30 years? How was that like, you know, when you first started out, and what were the inner workings that you kind of learned? I know on your bio, you says you produced images for most Fortune 500 companies. Is there anything that you kind of learned about how those companies work from the inside as a photographer, or were you not able to get in that deep?
No, I did get in that deep, and if you're interested in becoming a photographer, a commercial photographer, you need to get in that deep. I did this from a small town, Northern California, in Chico, and so to actually deal with Fortune 500 companies when you're not from New York or L.A. was kind of a story in itself. But what I found is that these companies are hungry for a new look. And what I created was one that I was probably one of the first guys that got out there in Photoshop. Soon as I discovered it could do the things that I could think in my mind, and now I could produce an image that looked like, I didn't have to deal with the laws of gravity when taking a photograph. I didn't have to deal with a lot of things that photographers need to deal with when you're shooting a creative image. So I produced imagery that was totally unique in most respects, especially at that time. And you get the world, the art directors out there for these companies are hungry for a new look. So I believe I got lucky, and I had agents in New York that picked up my work and showed it, which got me the work with these corporations. It helped a lot that I think I have a pretty good work ethic. Sitting at my computer and doing 10 hours to create one image is, to me, one of the most pleasant things I can do. And, you know, I'm alone. I got a house full of people that are in the other part of the house, but when my door is closed, I'm pretty much left alone. And I got a work ethic that said, I found out that if you're doing something that you love doing, like I do, creating an image, or in this case, writing, I can put in 10 hours, straight hours, and can't wait to get, heck, I'll go to bed and wake up in the middle of the night and come back and do it some more. So the passion for that certainly helped create, give me the ability to be a photographer that got out there in the world. I did get a master's in photography going to college, but here, just keep this a secret, Mike, okay?
Okay.
When you go for your master's, you have to do a master's thesis. And that required three professors from the college that I was at coming to me and interviewing me and asking me all these tough questions. The bottom line is when they came over, they were asking questions they really wanted answers to in photography. You know, like back in the day that I was doing this, you had chemicals, and they wanted to know, you know, did I agitate the black and white film for 3 minutes at 78 degrees, or was it for 5 minutes at 72 degrees? And they weren't asking me because they knew. They were asking me because they wanted to know. So I think because I fell in love with photography, I got in that deep, and it gave me the ability to get the educational part that helps a lot when you're out there trying to get work. So a lot of little things came into play. Work ethic, falling in love with what you do, and then getting an education around it. I never was able to work with any other photographers, though, because I was in Chico, and there weren't any other commercial photographers. And the right way to do it, Mike, is to be an apprentice for a top-notch photographer and learn the trade from him. I had to go the other route, probably took me longer, but I think at the same time I was able to help a lot of other folks that ended up working with me that became my assistants.
One of the things you said was shocking to me is that one image you said you were working on for 10 hours. Is that more or less the amount of time, especially when we're looking at, you know, these magazines, corporate magazines, you know, is that how long it takes to create those images, about around 10 hours per image?
You know, I can't answer that for the rest of the world. Almost all my images, my goal was to make one image in a day, especially in stock photography, where in stock photography, you literally create anything you want and you have agents that sell it. So it always took me 8 to 10 hours to make an image, but let me specify that sometimes I would work for 6 hours and the beginning of the seventh hour, I would throw my hands up in the air and go, what a waste of time, and throw it away and start another one.
Right.
So that act of creativity becomes a daily routine. You're there for, if you make an image today, well, tomorrow shows up and it's time to make another one. And every day keeps showing up, and pretty soon you've done every idea you ever had since you were 2 years old. And that's in the second year. So now you got 10 more years of having to come up with being creative, and you learn how to be creative. It's not like you're born with it. You learn how to become creative. And here we go again. I'm going to say something silly, but stealing's a really good way. looking at other people's work and going, hey, that's a great idea. And then taking their idea and turning it into your own. I would devour other photography. I'd spend hours looking at photos just to get inspired. And then there would be one and it would show up and I'd go, first I would be mad that I didn't think of it. And then I would say, okay, let's find out what I can do with this. And sometimes the image would never look the same. No one would ever really even realize it. But I know inside that's where that creativity came from. I was doing the work to find the creativity to get the image made. And then the response by the rest of the world was they bought them. I even sold an image for $40,000. One image that took me about 6 hours to make. And the company wanted it so bad they wanted all rights to it. And that's what that image cost. So you should also know that that was then, and that same image probably sells today for $1.50. If you wanted it on your phone, you could get it. So the markets change as time goes on, but that's kind of money that was in photography, especially when I was in it about 10 years ago. What a great time. Actually, hey, I'm getting old. 20 years ago, that's when that market was paying that kind of money for photography.
Wow.
I'm not sure. Have I kind of answered that question for you, Mike?
Yes, absolutely. You've done such a great job. You basically answered a lot of follow-up questions, so that was beautiful. Real quick before, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but you brought up an interesting point. That's a huge drop-off in compensation. Is digital age today kind of put a dent in the ability to make money as a photographer, or is it just kind of... Are things just different in another way?
Mike, that's a great question because so many people that are thinking about getting into photography. And my answer is absolutely do it. But boy, are you going to be tested. The answer to your question, the digital world is what made photography for me so profitable. So it took me out of just being in Chico and brought me into the whole world through the internet and through my ability to work with the technology in Photoshop. It's also technology that kicked my butt. So what was a $30,000 a month income from stock photography and from my other photography is probably now a $2,000. Same imagery, or if I still created imagery, it's dropped that much. That's more my fault than it is the industry. Because as things change, if you don't change with it, and you kind of hold on too tight to your what was working in the past, in this quick-moving world, you will get left behind. So the photographers that are making money now are the ones that are have caught on to the scene. It's they're more mass-producing images. They're not spending 10 hours on an image like I did. They're spending 10 hours shooting, bringing in absolutely beautiful people wearing beautiful clothes and doing business scenes or doing a party scene and having the whole thing set up. And they'll shoot 400 pictures and they'll send those off to agencies because the models are always doing different things and the photographer shoots with that kind of mentality. So I think it kind of left me behind because I, as much as I used to do that in some circumstances, that's tough to do. And you know what? I don't want to do that anymore. So I left that area of photography behind. And I would suggest anybody that was getting into this business as a photographer took a look at who's successful and how they're doing it. Then you can ride the digital world. If you just go, I want to be a photographer and all I want to shoot is are butterflies, I got news for you. You better be the best butterfly. Well, you know what? If you are the best butterfly photographer in the world, you're gonna do great. But if you're somewhere out there, number 50 to 500, you're not gonna do too good. So you have to change your thinking. You have to think about your competition and what you're capable of doing. And I don't know about how a lot of people are capable of bringing in and having the money to bring in professional models, dressing them, getting sets, lighting it, and then shooting it. But if you are a photographer and you're heading that direction, boy, the world is out there is wants to buy your imagery. For me, I left it. I decided to leave it. And now I sit behind my computer for 10 hours a day typing words.
Ah, that's very interesting. And for people listening, pay attention to the time and the the attention to detail that Michael's laid out. And you really could apply that for whichever discipline that you're in as well. And that whole idea of embracing the change and embracing the new age world. I mean, even the likes of Gary Vaynerchuk talks about that with social media and how you're supposed to be embracing that or you'll be left behind. We all know GM back in the day not making fuel efficient vehicles and them sticking to their big SUVs and trucks. They didn't adapt to change. They didn't innovate. They got left behind. So a lot of this stuff, it applies to more than one discipline. And certainly you just laid out how it applied to photography.
Yeah, Mike, I'm going to inject you here. It's
absolutely
really, really hard to let go. That example of GM, you know, it all comes down to people sitting in the room figuring out what they're going to do. And it's really hard to let go. It's like looking at chocolate cake and being hungry. You just don't want to walk away from it and try the new cake. and so it is one of the most difficult things in business is to take a leap.
All right. Well, anything else you want to add in there before I plug your books one last time?
Plug away, Mike, and thanks for letting me do this.
Thank you so much for coming on. Again, Michael
Hey, my turn. Mike Agliolo. But I like how you say it better. Agliolo is really good.
You can tell I watch too many gangster movies, man.
Are you Italian?
Half Argentine, so there's Italian in there. There's no question. But again, MikeAgliolo.com. Check that out. We will share it on our podcast website and on Twitter as well. Last Light and the 51st Directive. Go ahead and check those out. There's a lot of platforms to do that. We will share that as well. And Michael, when your third book is finished, let us know. And if you'd like to talk to us about it, go ahead. And you're always welcome back. I always joke around. Speaking of mobster movies and gangster movies, once it's blood in, blood out. So once you're in, you kind of got a third party fan for life. So keep us posted, and we're more than happy have you on or push whatever you're doing.
Fantastic, Mike. You're a gas. And by the way, I have the feeling just from talking with you that I hope for you, it sounds to me that you've got the talent and the whole thing going, that your pod's going to just fly too. So good luck for that.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's a pleasure having you.
You bet. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Be sure to follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at The Indie Rundown. And like our Facebook page, The Indie Rundown Podcast.
Now go home and get your f***ing shine box.